Hi, Women of Strength. Before we jump into today's episode, I just wanted to share something that's really close to my heart. If you're planning a VBAC or even just starting to think about one, you don't have to piece everything together on your own. You don't have to find every blog or hunt down a specific podcast episode. The VBAC Link Parent Prep Course was created by our founders, Julie and Megan, who are doulas and VBAC moms themselves. I actually took it when I was preparing for my own VBAC, long before I was a host of the podcast, just as a mom who needed clarity, confidence, and evidence-based information. So I can say, from a personal standpoint, that I know you'll love it. We also have a VBAC birth plan guidebook with a drag and drop template, and that's the exact template I used for my own VBAC birth. It made communicating with my care team so much more smooth. So if you're looking for practical, supportive VBAC prep from people who truly get it, you can find both the course and the guidebook at thevbaclink.com. All right, let's get into today's episode.
Welcome to the VBAC Link. Hi, Women of Strength. I'm Lily, your host, and I am joined today by the lovely, incredible Paige. Hi, Paige.
Hello, everybody.
It's actually been like a hot second since we have recorded, which is not anything that you would have known that if you're just listening. But for Paige and I, in real time, it's been a couple weeks since we sat down and got to like talk face to face. So what's been going on in your life? I care to know before we jump into this episode.
Aww.
Tell me about the last couple weeks of your life, lady.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I know. I'm glad that we have this like ongoing schedule so that we don't get too far of a break before we get to catch up.
I know. I've become emotionally attached to Paige. She's my emotional support, Paige.
I know. We have our podcast recording and then it's like, okay, but then how are we doing? We talk for like an hour after we record every week.
It's true.
Anyway, yeah, no, it's been good. My parents are here visiting. If you don't know this, I live in South Korea with the military, and my parents are visiting here from the States. So that's really fun. They're here for about 3 weeks, and
oh,
they
wow.
were
I didn't
here.
Know they were there for that long.
Yeah, they were here to be my childcare while I was on call for 2 births. And wouldn't you know, both babies decided to come before they got here.
Oh, no. So.
I'm not on call, but we've been getting to explore Korea and play. And yeah, it's a beautiful time right now. It's spring at the time of recording, so it's just so gorgeous outside. But yeah, what about you, Lil? You had some fun trips and
I have been really, really off call forever, it feels like. And so I had a little sweet little preemie baby that was born early in the year. And so it freed up like my full April. And so my husband and I went to New York. It's our 8th wedding anniversary. And I know I'm a baby, but I turned 30 in May. And so, yeah, so we like went to celebrate my early birthday and got to go see some shows. I have a friend that works on Broadway. So got to see her. It was so sweet. And I'm a big Harry Potter nerd, and so if you are too and you're listening, Tom Felton is currently in the Cursed Child Harry Potter show on Broadway, and he was Draco Malfoy in the movies, and he's playing Draco Malfoy on Broadway. So we got to go see that, and I cried. It was great. Oh, it was so good. I really regret that we saw a matinee, so he like doesn't come out of the stage door at matinees. And I really wish we had seen an evening show so I could have like waited at the stage door. But I heard that if you try to do it on a day that like you didn't see the show, that people get there at like 7 and he doesn't come out until 11. And I didn't want to try to do that. But I did go stalk Whitney Levitt twice at Chicago. So I did get a little selfie with my favorite reality star, which was cute. So yeah, I don't know. It was fun.
So
and now
fun.
I'm like a couple weeks away still from being on call again. I think I've got a week. And then I'll be back, which feels exciting. I have a very special mom who is going to have a VBA 2C and told me she was pregnant on a VBAC Link Live.
Aww,
we had like chatted in the VBAC Link DMs, and then she told me she was pregnant on a live and hired me as her doula at like 5 weeks pregnant. So I am really, really, really stoked for her birth. So
oh, yay. And I go back on call next week for my best friend who lives across the street. She's my neighbor, and I'm so excited. Oh, it's
oh, yay. Oh, this doula life, you guys.
We've got good things coming up.
Yes. I know. I'm like, you forget a little bit of the anticipation when you've been off call for a second, and so it's just really fun to be like, when is it going to happen? So,
yeah.
So, lots to come. All right. Well, Women of Strength, we have Casey on the podcast today. She is a labor and delivery nurse who's had a VBAC and talks about that journey of seeing really all the spectrum of outcomes and how she processed that as a nurse. And I think that her perspective is so valued. We get those questions often. But before we hear from Casey and her stories that, I don't know, she had surprise genders with both of her babies. And my brain like thought I heard two girls, and then that is not what played out. And I was surprised about her gender when she said it. So it's really fun. So, all right, my friends. Well, Paige has a review of the week before we get into Casey's story.
I do. This one's from Facebook. It's left fairly recently. It's from Doula Mama, and she says, I love utilizing the VBAC link as a resource for my clients. Their information is evidence-based, empowering, and incredibly helpful for families considering VBAC. The advanced VBAC doula training has also been very valuable in shaping how I walk alongside and support my clients throughout their journey. Oh, thank you so much. We take so much pride in our courses, and we talked about this in the episode actually too, about how this specific VBAC training helps birth workers have an understanding of the emotional side of VBAC. Like, VBAC is so much more than just having a vaginal delivery after a cesarean. It's navigating providers, it's navigating the emotions, it's processing, it's preparing your body, it's all of it. And we cover it all in our doula course and in our parents course, if you are a parent preparing for your own VBAC.
Yeah, it's true. Our courses are something that we are so excited about and continue to be excited about. So those are fantastic resources, and we're just honored to get to be a resource. I know that I really value evidence-based information, and so when we're putting things out online, it's really something I take pride in, making sure that our sources are cited, that we have really quality information. So thank you. All that to say, Women of Strength, you can leave us a review on Facebook. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can comment on Spotify. You can comment on YouTube or any of the places.
Subscribe.
Yeah.
Subscribe and follow, because that's what helps people find us too. Like, the algorithms are kind of changing, and reviews help a lot too. But like, also following us and subscribing on Spotify and YouTube and things like that helps.
Yeah. Tell your friends. And not for any selfish reason, but genuinely because Paige and I both experienced this before. We didn't host this podcast originally, if you're new to listening. We are newer to hosting. And both Paige and I found the VBAC link after our own cesarean stories. And so we know firsthand what it is like to be looking and searching for VBAC stories, and also how to make peace with repeat cesareans. I think those stories matter so much too, in our journeys. And so sharing and following and giving those reviews helps other mamas to find us who may be in a season where this would be chicken soup for their soul. That's what I wrote in my review back in the day. And I still feel like that is how I feel when I'm listening to these stories. So all that to say, we will be back after our intro with Casey. You don't want to miss it. Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider. Women of Strength, welcome back to the VBAC Link. We have Casey here with us. Yay! Hi. We are so excited to hear your story today. I'm going to read a little bit about Casey, and then we will get into all of this goodness. So Casey is a wife, mom of two, yoga teacher, ooh, yay, and labor and delivery nurse serving the Central Kentucky area. Outside of all the hats she wears, Casey enjoys being outdoors in any capacity, including long walks with her dog, Crypto, training for races, chasing her babies around the creek, camping, hiking, and playing sports with her husband. Casey has been a nurse for 7 years, 4.5 of which have been in labor and delivery. She has been a part of hundreds of births and is passionate about serving women and families during some of life's most pivotal moments. So we are so excited. I was saying this before we started recording, but almost weekly we get a question in our Facebook community about, I'm a NICU nurse, I'm a labor and delivery nurse, I've seen really scary things, and how do I feel confident moving forward with VBAC? So when Casey's story came in, I was just so excited to hear. So Casey, the floor is yours, and Paige and I are just, we're seated and sat and ready to hear your story.
Thank you all. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And that's actually where I wanted to start, because it is like, I have experienced it now twice, where at the beginning of my pregnancy, one, pregnancy for anyone is so anxiety producing because it's just so out of our control, right? Like, it's just hard to know what to expect. We can control the things that we can control, and it's still out of our control sometimes. And so starting with kind of going into my first pregnancy with my daughter, both of our babies were surprise genders. And so we did not know the gender, but obviously she is a girl. So, but I remember finding out I was pregnant and just racking my mind through all the things that could potentially go wrong, the things that I've seen in practice. I work at a very high risk facility. And so it's hard not to just pull those memories and those thoughts from work and be like, oh no, this could be my reality. And so that's where my faith really came in right off the bat. I was like, this can be tomfoolery of the mind, if you will. Like, I can let this absolutely make me sick with worry and anxiety. And so I just prayed and I said, God, like, you have control. You know how this is going to end. You know how this baby will enter the world, how this pregnancy will go. And so I'm going to leave it at that. And then also, one of the beautiful things about delivering in the facility that you work in is I know every single hand that would be in my care, and I trusted them. And I know that in any kind of crazy outcome, like, I would be in the best care, and that I, you know, trusted the people that would be taking care of me. And that gave me a lot of peace too. So between those two things, I was like, I could be sick with anxiety, but instead, like, I'm going to know the people that are taking care of me. And I'm going to know, like, based on my faith, like, God's got me, and we'll roll with it, whatever comes our way. So that helped me really right off the bat with the anxiety portion of being a nurse and seeing what you see and dealing with what you deal with, and just not carrying that in your pregnancy. So that was really, really helpful. My plan with my daughter's name is Murphy, was for an unmedicated birth. Thank you. We loved it. We loved it. We were actually really excited that she was a girl when we delivered, because we had that name picked out and we did not have a boy name. So it worked out in our favor, but was for an unmedicated delivery. I'd supported a lot of women in them. I was seeing a midwifery group that delivered at our hospital. And in my mind, again, we picture everything going a certain way. I was going to have my first baby in the hospital, and then after all that, I was going to have home births. That was my plan, like, all along, with, you know, what I wanted to see happen before I even worked in labor and delivery. And so, you know, I was like, all right, let's do this. And even chatting with, like, coworkers, I was like, you know, I hope I just stroll in here 10 centimeters. And everyone's like, yeah, you're going to come in here and, you know, squat out your baby. It's going to be awesome. Like, cheering for me, hyping me up. And now realizing, you know, it's not fair to put those expectations on people. Not that any of my coworkers or friends were trying to do that at the time, but even, like, for myself, just expecting that I would just come in and, you know, that was my hope and that was my goal, but putting those kind of unrealistic pressures on myself to do so.
And I think we do that so often, like, even not working in labor and delivery, we see birth stories online, and you can see, I think, one of two. You see either, like, really beautiful, magical births that happen, like, fast, and there's, like, a magical overlay of music over the top, which, by the way, can make any birth sound magical, no matter how it actually sounded in real life.
Right. Power of music.
And we also see the horror stories, right? And so I think we can start to do that to ourselves too, of like, well, I've watched so many birth videos. I'm so educated. You know, I took the birth class. I took the, you know, the one that said that I would just experience surges instead of contractions and all those things. And none of those things are wrong. And sometimes we put these expectations on ourselves that are really hard if we don't meet them.
Yeah, absolutely. And going off that too, it's like the balance of knowledge is power and knowing what's going on, and also like ignorance is bliss. And there's kind of like this healthy balance in the middle where I do want to know what's going on. And then like, I know so much of what's going on that like both can be anxiety produced, but like having to meet in the middle and saying, you know, realizing that every single birth is different, every single one. So you hear this birth story and this perfect birth story, and you're like, that sounds amazing. I want it to happen just like that. But everybody, every baby, every birth, every single one is different. Even if there's something relatable, your birth will still be different in some sense. Like that is just how we're created, you know, every piece of DNA, you know, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I had to find that line of knowledge is power and knowing too much and that causing issues. And sometimes I'm like, man, it'd be nice to just be a little bit, you know, more on the ignorance is bliss side and ride that out and just see what happens. And I feel like I actually accomplished that more with my second birth and putting way less expectations on myself than I did in the beginning with my first birth. But so with my daughter, that was our plan. I had a velamentous cord insertion. And so what that kind of means, is it okay if I explain that like and go into a little bit more detail? Yeah. Okay.
No, please tell us.
Okay. So where the umbilical cord normally inserts on the very middle of the placenta or somewhere in kind of in that middle region, a velamentous cord is over on the edge or the end of the placenta. And so sometimes that can change the flow of blood flow to the baby. Sometimes that can lead to exposed vessels for when delivery, if someone's breaking your water, just different things to think about. A lot of the times people don't even know they have a velamentous cord and your placenta delivers and you're like, oh, cool, look at this. But that was something that we found on one of our ultrasounds. And so I had a couple extra ultrasounds leading up to delivery.
And Casey, can you tell us the difference between that and a marginal cord insertion, just for those that are listening that are like listening to all the cord different variations that you can have?
Yes, I would love to. I think placentas are the coolest thing in the world. I am like obsessed. That sounds so crazy and silly, but I do. I love placentas. They're awesome. So marginal is where it's not in the middle. It's like towards the side, towards the end. So it's kind of going in that direction where it's not on the edge, but it's not in the middle, but it's closer to the side than it would be originally if it was kind of smack in the middle. And so then the velamentous comes on the edge of this or the side, the very end of the placenta, and is attached there. And so that's one of my favorite pictures that I have for my birth. It's just like my cool, I was really proud of my velamentous cord and my cool placenta. And I have a print of it that's actually somewhere, I'm sure, behind that little curtain back there that I have hung up on my wall, but little placenta nerd here. But so because of that abnormality of the placenta, I had a couple extra ultrasounds. And this, I also had an anterior placenta. And between the two led to us finding, amongst all these ultrasounds, that my daughter was breech. And so, again, that common, nothing crazy, but she was breech the whole time. I did all of the things, all the spinning babies things. I was upside down on my, you know, on my forearms as we got closer to, you know, delivery time. It really kind of started to mess with my head and change my plan for birth because I was thinking, okay, I wanted this unmedicated birth. I was going to spontaneously labor, you know, I was going to stroll in, hopefully 10 centimeters, squat out a baby. It was going to be awesome, just like I planned. And now I'm thinking, okay, there's not providers. I'm not comfortable. I was not comfortable with a breech birth. And the providers that I know of in my area, there's not someone that is super comfortable with breech birth. And so I was like, okay, so I have a couple different options now. Will anyone do an ECV on me with this velamentous cord insertion? Or will my anterior placenta, or will I not even be eligible for that? And then, of course, everyone has different thoughts and opinions on whether they'd want to do an ECV. For those listening, that's an external cephalic version where they turn baby on the outside of your body to try to get baby into a more optimal position for birth. So my husband and I, we opted to do an ECV. We did that at 37 weeks. It was extremely challenging one. Not for baby. Baby did great. Heart rate, everything was always awesome. but it was just, it was the longest ECV, the most intense ECV I've ever witnessed, even as a nurse. It took a little over an hour. The poor doctor that was doing it, it took two doctors, and they were like sweating through their scrubs and their hands were shaking. And of course, now looking back, I'm like, this baby was breached for a reason. I was trying to force this baby in a position that she didn't want to be in, but of course, hindsight's 20/20, right? But it ended up last try, it worked. So we got baby to flip, and then baby remained head down from there on out, which was awesome. So I was 37 weeks. A couple days later, I was feeling some contractions. I'm like, okay, this is good. I opted to get checked in the clinic and the midwifery clinic, and I was 4 centimeters. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, heck yes, like checking all these boxes, like let's go, let's have our awesome, spontaneous, unmedicated birth. I get to 41 weeks and not a sign of labor in sight. And that 41-week check mark, for some reason, was a really hard turning point for me, where I was still 4 centimeters. I wasn't really turning a corner where I was seeing signs of labor. And so I opted with my medical team to decide to have an induction. I was concerned about the velamentous cord. I wanted to make sure my baby was getting enough blood flow, all those things. And so I went in for an induction of labor that, you know, technically wasn't really medically indicated. It was mostly elective, just that it was really hard in my brain to still be pregnant at that point when I didn't think I would be. Started on Pitocin, labored for a long time. Things were intense. My water broke. I spontaneously broke my water, which was awesome. And hours into this process, I had one of the midwives check me. And at this point, I was like 6. She checked me again. I was still 6. And I was like, man, this is hard. So I opted for an epidural. Had a hard time. I have a hard time with epidurals. They're always one-sided for me. I don't know if it's my anatomy or what it is. I was having all this pain, like my pelvis was felt like it was breaking, tailbone pain, all sorts of stuff. And that's when we realized that my baby was in an OP position, or sunny side up is what a lot of people call it. It's a variation of normal, but sometimes that can just make labor, the process of labor, change a little bit. So I eventually, you know, I took an epidural nap. We got my epidural working. I got to 10 centimeters and I pushed for 5 hours, y'all. 5 hours. I pushed and I pushed and I pushed. I know. I could see the top of our baby's head. I felt like I was so close. I was in every position, positions that I've never even seen someone push in. Like even with an epidural in the bed, I was in like a runner's lunge and all, you know, anything that you can think of. I tried and tried and tried to get that baby out. I really did. And it got to the point where the midwife was like, okay, push, push, push. And I just broke out into tears because I was like, y'all, I don't think this is happening. I'm exhausted. I know everybody hits that point sometimes when they like their body is just so physically exhausted. This was around 26 hours of labor being on Pitocin and experiencing these contractions. I was still having some tailbone and pelvic pain, which can be common from babies being kind of a funky position sometimes. And we had one of the physicians come in, try to turn the baby. Baby was really wedged in the pelvis in kind of an extended position, so she wouldn't really tuck her chin to try to maneuver her way through the pelvis. And she wasn't low enough either for like an assisted delivery with, you know, a vacuum or anything like that. So at that point, my husband and I looked at each other and I was like, we have to go meet this baby. Like, I don't think there's another option. Like, I have given it 800% of myself. And like, this is not supposed to be. So we went to the operating room. It was not emergent. It was, you know, controlled. And we had a baby. And the surgery went well. Honestly, I feel like I recovered well. I processed and I did not feel like I was ever really traumatized or anything by the experience, which I'm really, really thankful for. I think that's where my knowledge of, you know, a C-section and labor not going that way, I think that's actually where it really helped me, because I was able to process and think, okay, that's like, it's okay that this happened. Like, this needed to happen. I gave it my all. I tried everything I could. And when I reflected back on the ECV and her being breached every single ultrasound, my entire pregnancy, I was like, this is the way she was supposed to be born. And sometimes I feel like babies are in a position for a reason, and babies, they know how they're going to come out and they know how they're not going to come out sometimes. And she said, heck no. But everything went well. And in my mind, when I decided to have a C-section, I looked at my husband too. And I said, this does not mean that I have to have C-sections for my future births. Like, we can have a VBAC. And I thought that when I was in the recovery room with my daughter too, I said, I can be back. Like, and the physician that, you know, delivered me, he said, your baby was in a really funky position. She just could not get, you know, that head tucked or whatever it was to where she could get in a more optimal position for birth. And I felt really good about it not being anything that I did or didn't do. Like, I tried all the things and there was nothing left on the table to do or to go for. So
going back to like that blame conversation, right? Like, we can so often, especially with baby's position, because then we see on like Instagram, like, oh, well, you could have done this spinning baby's move and it would have fixed everything.
Moxie bustion or yes. Like, yeah.
You know, and sometimes the answer is we can do all that we could do. And sometimes our babies just have their own story to tell, which doesn't make it any easier to process. And I think that there's a level of, we hold it with both and, right? Like, we don't want to just say like, oh, baby's in a funky position, like time to go to the C-section. And you balanced it so well of like, I'm going to do all of these things. And now I know, like, deep in my gut, I'm ready. And like, what a beautiful way to be able to like, to be in charge of your own experience, which I think is just incredible.
Thank you. Thank you. And it did, you know, there was even like saying it back, I'm like, well, maybe I shouldn't have tried an ECV. Maybe I should have known because, you know, but again, hindsight's 2020. We do the best with what knowledge we have at the time. And like, I don't regret any of my decisions because I made them with, you know, all the best intention and all the knowledge that I had at the time. And now maybe I'd make a different decision. I don't know, because I'm not in that situation right now. But yeah, it was awesome to feel good about our decisions, to feel supported and to not feel traumatized, because I know that's not everybody's story. And I hate that they, you know, carry that trauma and feel all that from their experiences. But I think that's where my knowledge actually really did help me, where before I was, you know, like, this could control me and this can make me so nervous and anxious. And I feel like I used it appropriately in that time. So I was proud of myself for that, even though it's really hard sometimes to not carry a lot of that with you. But
taking a quick break from our episode to share this important stat with you. Did you know a 2025 retrospective cohort study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doula care was associated with about a 15.6 increase in VBAC rates compared to those without doula support? Lily and I love doulas, and we are doulas. The VBAC Link was founded by doulas Julie Frankham and Megan Heaton, who created a comprehensive VBAC course for doulas. It's fully self-paced, completely virtual, and when you complete it, you're added to the VBAC Link doula directory. You'll also earn 8 ICEA continuing education hours and become a VBAC certified doula. And if you're a parent looking for a VBAC Link certified doula, you can find one at thevbaclink.com/findadoula. All right, let's get back to the episode.
And so then, let's see, my daughter turned like 15, 16 months and we found out we were pregnant again. Again, another surprise gender. They're so fun. If you haven't done that before, it's a really cool experience. But I started planning for my VBAC, and this is where things got really crazy for me, I think mentally, because again, I was able to let go of everything I've seen in practice and all the anxiety of being a nurse and, you know, separating that for myself. And I was like, okay, that what I need is a really supportive team. And my facility that I work at is very VBAC friendly. And so I'm really thankful for that. But I experienced a lot of like anger at work for a while in my like first and second trimester, because I don't even really know why, but I would see a situation just end in something that person wasn't planning for. And I think I just was internalizing that and thinking that like that could be my situation in the future with my birth. And then I started asking like providers, like what their take on VBAC was and if they would let someone in my situation like VBAC. And I was literally setting myself up for failure because they were giving me very honest answers and they were saying like, yes, but maybe if the patient didn't like push for 3 hours or something like that, and I was sitting there like, I pushed for five, different things like that. I was asking these questions knowing that I was going to be upset with the answers. And it was like such a weird position to be in because, again, I trust these people with my life. I trust these people with my baby's life. Like I really do. And there's not a single person that I can think of that has a negative intention. They want, good things for me, and they were all cheering for me. I knew that they wanted me to get my V back, but there was like certain things that just, I don't know. I was mad at the term TOLAC. Like I was like 13 weeks pregnant, and I was like, why do we even call it a TOLAC? That is setting people up for failure. We say that and we think that they're going to fail. Like a trial of like, I was really struggling with some anger in like the middle of my pregnancy. And
boy, that's so valid. And I think sometimes when we ask those questions, when you get a very medicalized answer back, it's like, okay, yes, I understand why you say that, but there's a lot of that's left out with the experience. And it's not like, well, depending on the woman's situation, or depending on that, depending on this. And so for you to internalize, it makes so much sense because that's where your mind is. And for the TOLAC piece, you're like, well, but what about how the woman is perceiving it? Who has gone through that? And that's like, they have to prove themselves. And I mean, I feel all the same things.
Yeah. And what an incredible nurse you must be on the other side of it for mamas that are going for VBACs to have like the like deep emotional understanding. It's why we have a VBAC certification for doulas, because not that a doula that's not VBAC certified can't support a VBAC, but there is this nuance and this emotional piece and the grappling with the terminology and all of that that is so unique to a VBAC mom that I just think, wow, what an amazing nurse you must be to have in someone's corner as they walk through these really tough things too.
Thank you for saying that. I think every single experience that I've had as a patient with my two births, I mean, I carry that with me, and that has absolutely made me a better nurse. The way I talk to people, the way I support people, I can just, sympathize, empathize everything so much better after having kids myself. And I don't think you have to have kids to be a fantastic nurse. I'm not even saying, I'm a fantastic nurse all the time or anything like that. But I feel so proud of the care that I give because of my lived experiences as well. And because of that, I wouldn't change anything. I've held hands and I've cried with patients because they were going back for their C-section when they thought their birth was going to go different. And I'm like, been there, girl. It's okay. Cry. My husband, we sobbed. My sister, who's also a women's health professional, she held my hands and she cried. And she's like, let's go have a, I had that huge emotional moment. It's not that I was like, oh, we're, best case scenario is, healthy mom, healthy baby. We say that. And that is, important. It is. But the experience of birth and everything is, sacred. It's so much more than that. And experiencing that matters. And yes, it does. It absolutely matters. So it just has helped me go into my profession every single day, holding so much more space for women, race, empathy, emotion, like leaving it all out there with them because it's the most raw, real, emotional, wonderful, crazy, scary, everything that you could think of. And that's birth. I mean,
yeah,
it really is. Yeah. It really is. But
wow.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I just love it so much. I love birth. It's awesome.
It's the best. Okay. Continue. So you're at your provider. You got your questions you're asking. And
Yes. And it was just so wild to me that I was feeling all these like angry emotions, and they weren't directed at any one person or anything. Just I was mad at the system, mad at, I don't know, but I didn't hold any like anger towards my C-section. Like I processed my C-section so well. And then here I was pregnant and planning for a VBAC, and I found myself angry, and I was like, did I forget to process something? Like, did I miss something? I don't know. Where's this coming from? And specifically, I think I was like 22, 23 weeks. We had an emergency in the hospital, and I was assisting in the operating room with a patient who was experiencing a uterine rupture. And I truthfully was never worried about a uterine rupture. Like for me, I did a lot of research. I listened to a lot of podcasts. I listened to a lot of successful VBAC stories with the VBAC link. And I was like, that's one thing that I am personally not worried about. You know, it's one of those things again, where I was like, if my uterus is going to rupture, my uterus is going to rupture. Like it's out of my control. And I'm like, thank you, God, you got me, keep me safe, keep my baby safe, you know, but like, if I can't do anything about this, if that's going to be my experience. But we were in the OR and I had a resident that asked me, this patient was under general anesthesia, but asked me, has this scared you out of having a VBAC yet? And I was so proud of myself because I was super angry, but I just smiled and said, nope. And I hope in my mind, it felt really sassy the way I said it. I don't think it was. But, and again, I'm like, you don't have to make the same decision, but I don't know. It didn't feel like the time to ask a question like that.
No.
But, and like, I understand that we have these experiences in the hospital as medical professionals, and they are scary. Like, that was not the first uterine rupture I'd been a part of. I've been a part of a handful, and they're scary. And like, that's a part of, I don't know, that's a part of it. But that was never a fear of mine. And so I think getting that fear projected onto me when that was something I really wasn't super worried about or concerned about made me pretty mad. And so that added to just that layer of just anger that I had. And it was so crazy. If anyone knows me, I'm like, I'm really not an angry person. I don't like to sit in anger. I don't like to be angry. So uncomfortable. I was actually considering at this point, like, maybe I should home birth. Maybe I should, go to a different facility. And it wasn't because my facility wasn't VBAC supportive. It was just that I was having so much trouble separating my job and like me working in this environment as like me coming in as a patient and experiencing a VBAC myself. And so I struggled with that for a while during my pregnancy. I had coworkers ask me if I was scared, and which is like, I don't know, kind of valid. Like, I don't know, like, people are scared of birth all the time. Like, people are scared of a lot of things. I don't know. So I didn't really think too much of it, but I think that was making me kind of frustrated and angry as well. And none of these people meant poorly or ill or anything like that. People were just generally like asking if, because maybe in this experience, if they were the ones planning for a TOLAC or VBAC, maybe they would have been scared. But again, having that like projected onto me when these weren't things that I was really super worried about was really hard for me to kind of navigate. And then the one other thing that was frustrating was with I was seeing the midwifery group that I saw for my first birth. And we have a weird policy where they can't educate us on the risks of VBAC. And so you have to like consult a physician. I'm not sure if that's the same thing in a lot of facilities, but I remember I was just so mad about it. I was like, one, I understand my risks. And two, the midwives can tell me my risks. And three, I know that they're going to tell me that I walk in and they tell me I'm not a good candidate and they don't support. I'm like, that's just not going to make me feel supported, set me up for success or put me in a good mindset. I just really, that middle part of my pregnancy really, really struggled. So luckily I went to consult with the same physician that delivered me in my C-section. He was wonderful. And, we did the good old VBAC calculator that told me I had less than a 20% chance of a VBAC. And I knew that we would do that. And I already knew like it wasn't going to be good. You pushed for 5 hours, you didn't have a baby. I get it. But I'm also like, the VBAC calculator, it does not consider all the factors that go into birth. Like, there's no calculator that can consider everything that goes into birth. But he said, he's like, this is what the calculator says. He's like, but I remember the crazy position your kiddo was in. And he's like, I think you have a much better shot than that. And so I say, go for it. Let's do this. Like, and we'll kind of take it from there. And so I was really actually appreciative of that advice and support. And at that point I was like, I have to get myself, I'm getting, into the third trimester and I need to get myself out of this weird, funky mindset that I'm in. And one, I love my job, so I don't want to be angry going to my job or feeling that like resentment when it's not directed towards any of the people that I work with the facility. It's just like, it is a personal thing that I'm holding on to. And one, I need to let that go. That's not good for my health. That's not good for my pregnancy. That's not good for me professionally. And again, that's where my faith really came in to play. And I prayed and I said, God, like, you have to change my attitude on this. Like, you really do, because I cannot just hold on to this anger. One, I hate being angry. I hate it. I'm not good at it. I don't like it. I don't like sitting in that feeling. It's so uncomfortable for me. And I said, like, please, Lord, like, change my attitude and let me be able to show up for these mamas like I want to. And also, like, again, you have your hand in this pregnancy, and I know that you know how it's going to end, and you know when this baby's going to come into the world and how my birth is going to go, and I'm going to leave it in your hands, and that is that. And so after I kind of had that prayer and had that literal come to Jesus moment, I thought, okay, like, we have to let this go. I have to stop searching for answers that are going to make me sad or make me mad or make me feel unsupported, because ultimately, like, I think I know I can do this. My husband knows I can do this. My sister, who again was going to come support me for our second birth, she knows I can do this. The midwives have, like, told me nothing but, yes, let's go, let's do this, given me a big old green light, like, you can do this, we got you. And I thought about me walking to the hospital and any one of my coworkers, nurses, like, I knew everybody was going to be cheering for me. So I was like, I'm reaching for something to be angry about. And I have to just let this go because, you know, these people got me. Like, I have my team, I have my support, and we can do this. And that was a really big turning point for me. I was like, I cannot carry this into the third trimester. I cannot get my mind right and prepare for labor and to have this awesome VBAC if I'm, like, carrying this on my shoulders and this tension and anger. So
that's such impressive self-awareness, though.
Like, oh, for you to recognize, I did not feel that
in yourself, and to be like, okay, no, we need to change. Yeah. And, like, that was you coming to you to take the initiative to do that. And I think that's really powerful. So I'm impressed.
Thank you. Thanks for saying that.
And that's what we hope for in any provider when, like, there's triggering moments, right? Because we recognize that in our healthcare providers is, like, they see the gamut. They see the uterine rupture. They see the hard stuff. They see the emergency. And, like, how do we find it in ourselves? Like, oh, wait, I have to do some self-reflection and I have to not bring this story into that story. And bravo.
Thank you. I appreciate you all saying that. It took a long time. It took, I mean, weeks of me trying, just being like, why am I holding on to this and feeling this way? And I did. I feel like I honestly just got too pregnant and tired to be like, I can't be doing this anymore. I was chasing around my daughter at home, working full time. I was like, I gotta start preparing for this baby. We did do a 32-week scan. And another thing too that helped my attitude was just this baby was always head down. And I'm like, hooray, like, this is so exciting. Like, again, just little signs that this could be different. And it was so silly when I had, like, my 12-week ultrasound. And I was like, oh, thank goodness this baby's head down. And, like, that means nothing at 12 weeks, right? Like, you never know. Like, baby's so small. But I kid you not, my daughter, my first birth, not one time, 12 weeks, you know, was breech. 20 weeks, breech. 28 weeks, breech. 32, 30s, everything. And so I was like, just even to have a little glimpse of hope that this baby's going to be head down, like, we're starting off on a good note. Let's do this.
Was your placenta anterior or posterior? I'm just curious.
Posterior.
Posterior. Okay.
No, I'm saying this. I have no research or anything to prove this, but there is a correlation between baby girls' anterior placentas and the breech position.
My daughter was breech at 32, and then I flipped her by 34 anterior placenta. So
okay,
maybe, maybe.
Yeah. And I see this in practice too, and I'm like, in my mind thinking, I don't know. I feel like I'm onto something.
We need to do a study on this. To prove
that. Yes. nobody quote me, but unless it's true and then quote me, I said it right here first. Yeah. But it was posterior, no issue, you know, no cord issues or anything like that. Baby was in a head down position at my 32-week scan. And I was, like, feeling really encouraged by that. So between my, like, letting go as I was going to the third trimester, head down position, I then supported four mamas in successful VBACs at the hospital. And that was, like, I swear, it seemed like a God thing, just the encouragement that I needed. because I was coming out of this, like this anger and this disappointment and frustration at work. And then I had these awesome deliveries and I was like, yes, like this happens. This is the norm. Like so many women VBAC, like this can happen. I don't have to be scared. I don't have to, you know, like my coworkers and the doctors and the midwives, like everybody encouraged them and helped them, like, you know, they will do the same thing for me. And it was just really encouraging to be a part of. So between all those things, I was like, okay, let's do this. Then a week later, 33 weeks, I wake up in the morning and I have a weird change in like the shape of my belly, and like my ribs were sore, and I have a very short torso. You can't tell in this video, but I do. And I was like, oh no, I think this baby has flipped and is breech. And I was like, you're kidding me. And I could palpate a head right here, which is exactly where my daughter's head always was. I could always tell that she was not moving or flipping or anything like that, because her little head was just right here on my left upper abdomen. And I would just pat it and be like, hey, baby, why aren't you flipping? But I could, again, palpate and feel this head right here. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. This baby did not flip. So I went to work and had one of our sweet midwives just throw a quick ultrasound on. There was, in fact, a head that was up and a booty that was down. And I was like, I felt so discouraged in that moment, because I was like, why does my body only grow breech babies? Like, why, what is going on here? And I started doing all the same things. I was like, okay, this baby's been head down. Maybe we can be head down again. And a week later, baby flips back. Like, it was a very short, brief period of time, and baby stays head down. But it felt very triggering in the moment, because I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I've been doing all this like hype and mental work and preparation for this VBAC, and this baby's going to be breech again. And you're kidding me. And my husband and I said that we would never do an ECV again, but maybe I will. Like, I don't know. We were going down this path of, this is not how we saw things going. And luckily, this baby flipped back and was in a head down position. And that just meant from then on out, I was just preparing and waiting and getting ready for labor. And so I just hold on to babies past due. That can be very normal. Again, you know, due dates are just estimations anyways. And so I see 40 weeks and we start to kind of creep past there. And our facility does want to induce labor at 41 weeks. And so I'm like, okay, maybe we go down this path and I have an induction again. And I felt like I had a really healthy mindset though of, I could have the exact same outcome as I had before. And I was willing to accept that and to go through all of that again. But I had to give it a shot. Like, I just knew that I wanted to try and that I really felt like my body could do it. But even if I got to 10 centimeters, pushed for 5 hours again and had the same kind of outcome, I was like, okay, like I can live with that. Like, we can, that's going to be okay. I can accept that and we can process it again. I know I can heal from a C-section. I know I'll be able to do it again. Like, our bodies can do this. And so I was going to get induced on a Thursday. Sunday, I was in church. So I was 43, I think, and start contracting. And I'm contracting like every 3 to 5 minutes. They weren't painful, but I was like, okay, this is rhythmic. Like, something's going on here. Like, okay, I'm excited about this. We get through church. I'm like, I'm going to lay down, take a nap, you know, save some energy just in case anything happens. Wake up, not a single contraction the rest of the day. And I was so bummed. And that can, you know, that's very normal. I know this, but again, when it's happening to you, it just feels so different than like what we coach other women and families through. But at this point I was like, okay, I'm going to get to 41 weeks. I hang on to babies, you know, to after 41 weeks. That's just what my body does. That's okay. But, you know, we're going to go in midnight at Thursday. We're going to have our induction and we'll see what happens then. So it's kind of what I have my mindset set on. I sleep super hard between Sunday and Monday. And I wake up and again, start contracting every 3 to 5 minutes. And I'm like, whatever. At this point, I'm like, okay, this happened yesterday. Like, it ain't labor. It's fine. And so I go about my day. I text my husband. He's at work. I'm like, hey, I'm contracting. Like, no big deal. You don't need to come home. Everything's fine. Comes home later. I'm still contracting. I start, you know, I have my daughter here at the house. I'm supposed to work that evening. Like, I picked up like 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. or something like that. And at this point, I'm just like picking up shifts because I'm like, might as well, you know, like, why not? I'm in the right place if I go into labor, whatever. And I start kind of feeling, you know, things are feeling a little bit more intense. But like, it was like, it slowed down. Everything was like, you know, every 7 minutes, every 10 minutes. I said, I'm going to try to take a nap. And if I wake up and, you know, things kind of take off or whatever, you know, I'll call into work. But I was like, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to wake up and I'm going to be fine. And he's like, okay, like go lay down. I lay down for an hour. I wake up and I'm like, see, I did not have a single contraction like that entire time. Like I'm not in labor. And then one hits me and I feel like this big old contraction come on and I'm moaning and groaning. I'm rolling around in the bed. I was not ready for it. And he was like, yeah, you're not going to work tonight. And I just kept thinking, I'm going to feel so silly.
You might have gone to work that night, just not to work.
And I did. Exactly. I just kept thinking, though, I'm going to be so silly if I call into work and then I'm not in labor. Like, I'm not actually in labor. Like, how silly will I feel right now? But luckily, things continue to kind of take off and kick into gear. And I had a really hard time because I just loved the time that we had, just the three of us with our daughter, with our firstborn. And like this, it was really, really special. We had a really sweet, special summer together. Both my babies were born in August. So like that summer was just, we like were on a mission to make it just the sweetest, best summer with just the three of us, because we knew our family was about to change. And it's amazing. Our bodies are just incredible, because I remember being like, I was fighting the contractions as they were coming. Again, still every 7 to 10 minutes, I still in my mind was thinking, I'm not in labor. I was breathing through them, moaning through them. My daughter was like climbing on my back and I was like huffing and puffing through these contractions thinking, no, I'm not in labor. Like for every 10 minutes, like, nah, like this isn't labor. Every, you know, labor's contractions every 2 to 3 minutes. Like it was so funny how in my mind, I was telling myself the opposite of what I tell women when they come in to the hospital and to triage. And I'm saying, no, trust what you're feeling. Like they're huffing and puffing through these contractions. And I'm like, yes, let's do it. Let's have a baby. And here I was in my living room, my 1.5-year-old or, you know, almost 2-year-old crawling on my back. And I was like, no, I'm not in labor. It was just funny, the mindset change. But we had a hard time when I got to the point thinking, okay, like I think I need to let her go to my sister-in-law's house down the street and we need to work through this. And we did. We had our big old cry moment of our last, you know, this is our last moment, our family of three. We let her go down the street. And at that moment, my body, like something flipped and my body just kicked into gear. And it was like that release of knowing that like, she's good. She's taken care of. Let's do this. The contractions started coming faster. And I called my charge nurse. I said, have a room ready for me. I'm coming. So it was crazy just how things changed so quickly. I told my husband,
I
said, you know,
wild that you were supposed to work the night you went in labor. Like that I think is really sweet, actually, really special that like you were literally supposed to be there no matter what.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And August is really busy. And so I was really lucky that like I showed up and there was like a room available for all the things that just kind of lined up perfectly. But I was like, listen, I'm here, y'all, but it ain't to work. I promise you don't want me working in these conditions. But I told my husband, I said, we have to go to the hospital. I'm ready for an epidural. There was still a piece of me that was like, you know, if I push for so long and, you know, don't have a baby, like, you know, I want to make sure that I have that set up so that we can go have a baby and I'm covered in that sense. But I said, I want to have an epidural and I think my water's going to break and we're going to have this baby. And so we drive 45 minutes down the road, huffing and puffing through the contractions. And we get to the hospital. I walk across the pedway, across the hospital. I tell him he doesn't have to pull up to the front. It's not that bad. It's not that serious. It's so silly. And we get there and I walk in the room and my water breaks within 2 minutes of being there. And I have that feeling of just heaviness, like a baby is going to emerge from my body. But I said, first, please, like, I want that epidural. I want that coverage, that CSE, just in case anything, you know, goes awry. So they do that for me. And within 4 hours, I deliver a surprise baby boy in my VBAC. I was in hands and knees. And my husband got to help catch.
I don't know why I assumed this whole time that you had two girls. And so I'm like shocked right now.
Yes. Yeah. It was a boy. It was a little son. So we have Murphy and we have Miller as my son.
Stop.
He's almost 9 months now, which is crazy to think about because I feel like the story was literally just last week. It's wild, but all the things that we wanted and pictured for our first birth, my husband catching the baby and helping deliver, and I delivered on hands and knees and he passed him up to me and we got to announce together the gender. And I literally looked at him and I said, that was awesome. I want to do that again. In that exact moment, I was so proud and it was beautiful. It was so beautiful. It was just the preparation was almost harder than the delivery. It seemed it was amazing. And so I was just really proud of myself and yeah, it was amazing. It was awesome.
Casey, that's Casey. So cool.
Defying all and everybody. I mean, I got off the elevator when I walked up to our floor and it was shift change. And so all the day shift nurses were leaving and the door opens and I'm moaning and groaning through a contraction. And there's like 7 or 8 nurses about to get on the elevator and go home. And they were like, yeah, Casey, go Casey. Like they were just cheering for me. It was awesome. And that's when I was like, I'm in the right place. I'm with all of the right people. Like these people got me. Let's go do this. And so all the anger, all the fears that I had, even, you know, those 12 weeks of just being so angry and being so, I don't know. I don't even know where it came from still, even when I reflect back on it. But it was the best team. It was awesome. And I'm so thankful again for both births, for both perspectives, and now to take that and carry that and provide the best possible care I can for other mamas and their deliveries and their moments too. So
Wow. Okay. Well, I am curious because you said with your first birth, you wanted an unmedicated delivery and then you were going to have all home births. So now post having had a hospital VBAC and having it been like such a great experience, has that shifted for you at all? Do you think you'll have another hospital VBAC someday? Do you think you'll want to have a baby at home? I just am curious to know where your head's at.
Yeah.
Not that you need to be thinking about it right now.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think we are open. After that experience too, though, my mind is like, my next pregnancy is going to be different. My next delivery will be different. So
yeah,
I hope that I can just continue to be back and have those awesome experiences and births, but every delivery is different. And so I try not to hold that same expectation of what happened with my second birth and carry that forward because who knows, what if I don't know, I'm pregnant with twins and need to, you just never know. You never know what's going to happen. We would like to have, we don't feel like our family is complete yet. And so I do think about that. And I'm not saying home birth is off the table. I'm not saying, you know, we'll just see in that moment kind of what we'll decide then what our plan is and what we feel most comfortable doing and where we feel most
supported. We'll have you back and you just let us know.
Yeah, I'll come back and I'll tell you guys. So stay tuned, right?
Can't wait.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Incredible.
So good. I know. I love talking about it. It just brings me joy. So anyone listening, you can do it. You can do it.
Yeah.
People believe in you. I believe in you.
With the listeners, you were telling us this before we hopped on to record about looking at your birth experience through a clinical lens versus the like lived experience. And how is that like to shift and how does that work in your nurse brain to like have lived a birth and then sometimes to process it as a provider, like with those kind of eyeballs on things?
Yeah, it's even, again, thinking about both of my births, I was very much so, okay, this happened and then this happened and this happened. And it led to this. But it took all of the real emotion out of it. And so I had to step back and like literally take off my nurse hat and be like, no, Casey, this was you. This was your two, like half your husband, half you, like the person I love most. These were our babies that we had, my two most favorite little people on the entire planet running around. And there was so much emotion. And again, in the pregnancy and the birth from the beginning, when I had to really let go of the anxieties of the things I've seen and the things I know, it was so awesome though to come and prepare for this podcast and to relive that though. I mean, I forgot that I was so angry and I forgot that I burst into tears when we decided to go have a C-section because I had nothing left to give energy wise. Like I was like, I cannot push a single more time. And even if I do, I don't know if it's going to change the course of what's to come for us. And so I mean, I do. I could like cry thinking about it sometimes because it broke my heart to have to make that decision. And the feeling of having my baby back, holding my baby in my hands and like just smiling and kissing my husband and saying, oh my gosh, we have a boy. One, we both thought it was probably going to be a girl. So it was just crazy. We didn't have a preference, but we were just, I don't know. My husband was so sure it was a girl. So I was like, I don't know. He knows, I guess. But just putting all of that raw, real emotion back into it. And I do. I try really hard to keep all of that raw, real emotion, the same things that I felt, and take them into practice with me. Because again, I think that makes me a better nurse when I take down those clinical walls and remember, you know, because it can be easy, or it could be really, yeah, it could be easy to walk in. Oh, it's another labor. Oh, it's another day. Oh, it's another this. It's another birth. And it's like, it's not that for people. Like,
yeah,
the two most pivotal points of my life, almost, other than choosing to marry my husband and stuff too, but were these wild, unpredictable, crazy, out of control experiences almost. So I have to remember to take all the same emotions I felt in all these moments and put them back into what I do every single day and every single delivery, because it's every person's different, every experience is different, and what they're feeling is so real and raw and hard to process and beautiful, and it's the biggest moments of their lives, and it's an honor, it's an absolute honor to be a part of. But it's hard, it's sometimes really hard to just flip that switch. And so I was at first thinking of my births like, oh, this happened and this happened, and then I had a baby, and I was like, no, I had a baby, like that's my baby, that's my baby right there. And well, they're both asleep right now, but I was like, that is, you know, I look at them every single day and like I birthed them, and that was the hardest, most beautiful things I've ever done. And I have to remember that. Like, I deserve to remember that, because both births, both types of birth are raw and real and challenging and beautiful and deserve to be celebrated and to be stories that are told to people. Like, all birth stories deserve to be told, you know? So it was.
There's nothing to me more powerful than a woman telling her own birth stories.
Yeah,
because there's so much from that lived experience that you miss when you're just looking at it, when you're reading notes from it, or when you're seeing it on paper, just like the step play by play what happened. And that's why I love this podcast so much, because that's how we make birth better. We can't make birth better without knowing what it's like for the women going through it. And so
Absolutely. Thank
you for coming today, because there's so much context to everything. To everything behind Absolutely. Your decisions. And we can't miss that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So good.
Absolutely.
Okay. I have one more question for you. We're getting to the very end. But any wise words of wisdom for the moms who want to have a VBAC, but maybe they're a NICU nurse or an LND nurse and they see the hard things? What would you say to the mama or to the past you that was standing in that operating room with a uterine rupture, being asked a really hard question? Any sage words of wisdom for those listeners?
I think you have to find your peace. And whether that's, you know, for me, that was prayer and the intentionality to change my attitude. But also, you shared in the beginning, I'm a yoga teacher. And so breathing, just taking a couple deep breaths, rerouting your literal nervous system to come out of that fight or flight mode and allow yourself to just think clearly, get all of the information, and trust that you will make the best decision for yourself, whatever that looks like. And having a supportive team is the best thing that you could ever ask for. So don't stop, like, keep finding somebody out there that will support you in your decisions. And yeah, learn all the information and trust yourself to make the absolute best decision for you and your body and your family.
Love it. All right, Casey. Well, thank you for being here. It was such a joy to have you.
Thank you all so much. That was so good for my soul to just share my story and to relive those awesome, awesome, hard, beautiful moments. So I appreciate you all so much.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode and for being a part of our community. One of my favorite parts of the VBAC Link is the community itself. When I was pregnant and planning for a VBA 2C, the VBAC Link community group on Facebook truly became a virtual village for me. It's where I could see real VBAC stories, ask questions without judgment, and get encouragement from people who genuinely understood what I was preparing for. If you are planning a VBAC and want support as you get ready, head over to Facebook and search the VBAC Link community, because women of strength become even stronger together.